Blog Talk Radio.
Reckless speculative activity in creating a healthier society.
Between 1935 and the late 1970s, progressive tax rates and investments in infrastructure, education, and housing expanded the middle class and served as foundation for decades of broadly shared prosperity. Today, opinion polls indicate widespread renewed support for proposals to increase taxes on millionaires, make Wall Street pay its fair share, and close corporate tax loopholes.
The next one is the expenditures that would make the United States and world more secure. The Pentagon consumes more than half of the U.S. federal discretionary spending, with much of it on things that do not make us safer. While some jobs rely on this spending, a study by economists at the University of Massachusetts has shown that the military budget is a poor job creator compared to other forms of federal spending. Whereas $1 billion devoted to military production creates approximately 11,000 jobs, the same amount invested in clean energy creates about 17,000 jobs, in healthcare, 19,000 jobs, and in education, 29,000 jobs. And we identified three areas where a total of $252 billion in cuts can be made to free up funds for job creation without risk to national security. They are ending the war in Afghanistan as we end the war in Iraq, reduce the sprawling network of overseas U.S. military bases, and eliminate programs that are obsolete and or wasteful. All three of these goals are supported by the majority of Americans. Revenue increases and subsidy cuts that will create a cleaner environment.
If all polluting industries were required to pay the full cost of environmentally harmful practices and products, they would have greater incentives to adopt improved green technologies and reduce our nation's dependence on foreign oil. The Obama administration has promised to eliminate fossil fuel subsidies, and yet U.S. taxpayers are still spending tens of billions of dollars per year on handouts to giant oil and other energy firms. We recommend eliminating this corporate welfare and introducing new taxes on pollution that could generate an estimated $197 billion per year in revenue.
Now, see, those are three simple steps, you know, and you would save all kinds of dough, you know. And, you know, it's just amazing to me. Hang on a second. Let me see if I can open the rest of this file.
It just talks about the contributors.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Okay, wait. Revenue that advance a more equitable society, new tax on Wall Street, corporations and individuals.
We already said that.
Okay. Revenues, expenditure cuts. Do taxing Wall Street corporations.
We talked
wealthy.
About that.
All right. Taxing financial transactions, $150 billion could be saved there.
That'd be good.
Anyway. All right.
Now, that's something that Ralph Nader had suggested.
That's right.
Like
be.
A penny.
Yeah, a penny of stock.
A penny of stock.
And that's trillions of dollars worth of stocks transferred every day. And apply a levy on the largest banks of $9 billion. The White House has proposed a levy on the liabilities of financial firms with more than $50 billion in assets. While this is no substitute for taxing financial transactions, it would help recoup at least a small share of the cost of crisis and provide a deterrent against excessive leverage for the largest financial firms.
Stop tax haven abuse, but get $100 billion.
And close the stock option loopholes, that would be $2
billion. Level a progressive estate tax on large fortunes, $35
billion. Yeah. And create additional tax brackets for people earning $1 million or more per year, and eliminate the tax preference for capital gains and dividends, which would equal $79 billion.
Wow.
All right. Now, those were the ideas that came up. And then cutting military spending, of course, is a tremendous. Ending the wars in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we mentioned that.
Eliminate
we talked about that.
One-third of U.S. bases in Europe and Asia, which would save $10 billion. Eliminate remaining operations in Iraq, $11 billion. Cutting unnecessary weapons, $22 billion. Eliminate underutilized aircraft groups, $8 billion. cuts to U.S. nuclear arsenal, $21 billion.
Savings from reducing inefficiencies, $20 billion.
Nuclear weapons complex cuts, $2 billion.
State Department foreign military financing, $6 billion.
Outsourcing cuts, $30 billion. Outsourcing cuts. The Project on Government Oversight and Taxpayer for Common Sense also estimated that a 15% cut in outsourcing of Defense Department functions would save at least $30 billion a year. And this practice has drastically expanded since the year 2000, despite serious problems with the lack of contractor accountability and efficiency. And this goes all to these contractors,
yep.
Military contractors. Taxing pollution and cutting environmentally hazard subsidies.
Okay, just go back for a minute. Just go up. Just go up. Tax carbon emissions. Potential annual revenue, $75 billion. Tax air and water pollution, $38 billion. Charge user fees for public resources. What do they mean by that?
Not sure. That, there's a lot. There's a whole bunch of things there that come up to 190. Carbon tax. A tax on carbon content of fuel, fossil fuels could reduce LBU's dependence on foreign oil. Air revenue estimates for taxes of carbon oil, okay, I guess that's one. Air and water pollution taxes, 38%.
$38 billion,
okay. Alternative energy and these figures, these are all...
Corporate. Oh, here it is. User fees for public resources. This explains that taxpayers should be fairly compensated when the private sector profits off our public resources, such as offshore oil drilling and gas production, and the use of radio spectrum licenses. We've talked about this.
And television.
Yeah, modest increase in these payments could raise an estimated $7 billion per year.
Fossil fuel, nuclear, and other energy subsidies. Agricultural, transportation, and land water subsidies, $11 billion and $24 billion. I mean, it's just tremendous amount of money here that we could save, and in this area. And I hope you can go to IPS, Institute of Policy Studies, and check out this thing. And if you happen to be on Facebook, you can see my update there. I posted it. Okay. The next one. We have Gail coming up, Gail Townsend coming up.
And she can talk
a little bit about this. But I just want to bring it, it's not a very long article, but it's something it is kind of a long article, but I just want to mention it. Is that Israel's plan to destroy Iran's civilian infrastructure. Israel plans not only to attack Iran's fledgling nuclear program, but also its civilian infrastructure. Eli Lake, writing for the Daily Beast, cites current and former U.S. intelligence officials who say Israel's target list includes Iran's electric grid, internet cell phone network, and emergency frequencies for firemen and police officers. And officials say Israel has developed a weapon that simulates a maintenance cell phone signal commanding cell networks to sleep and stopping transmissions. It also has electronic jammers that can interrupt frequencies. So Israel wants to bomb the shit out of Iran and wants to destroy their infrastructures.
Yeah.
That's just 1/6 son of a bitch country. All right, we've got a couple more minutes, another 15 minutes here, but I want to. This one pissed me off in a big way because Newt Gingrich is a moral cripple. Everybody knows that, and. You know, he is saying that he is denouncing the Occupy Wall Street here. United States Republican candidate Newt Gingrich has mocked the Occupy Wall Street, saying the protesters need to get a job and take a bath. All the Occupy movement starts with the premise that we all owe them everything, quote Gingrich, is saying at Thanksgiving Family Forum in Iowa on Saturday. They take over a public park they didn't pay for, to go nearby to use restrooms they didn't pay for, to beg for food for places they don't want to pay for, to obstruct those who are going to work to pay taxes, to sustain the bathrooms and sustain the parks so that they can self-righteously explain that they are the paragons of virtue to which we owe everything. That is a pretty good system of how much the less the symptom of how much the left has collapsed as a moral system in this country, and why you need to reassert something by saying to them, go get a job right after you take a bath, Gingrich continued, his audiences applauding. The Thanksgiving family forum, now you've got to remember, this guy's the biggest
hypocrite
that ever walked the face of the earth. All right, he's married three wives, the worst of them on their deathbed.
This is the guy who told his wife, who was dying of cancer, that he'd found someone else.
And as a second wife, he already had a third wife planned. All right, and he's been banging around ever since. Thanksgiving Family Forum was sponsored by the Family Leader Group, which is headed by controversial social conservative Bob Vander Blatz. The Vander Blatz and his group are claiming that children born into slavery were better off than those living in America with Barack Obama as president. These guys are freaking crazy. The Occupy movement emerged after a group of demonstrators gathered in New York's financial district on September 13, of course, blah, 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 blah. But despite the police crackdown and the mass arrests, the Occupy movement, which grew out of Occupy Wall Street movement, has now spread to major U.S. cities as well as to Australia, Britain, Germany, Italy, Spain, Ireland, Portugal, and other countries. So up yours, Newt Gingrich. May you, may you forever hang.
And he has the nerve to run for president. I can't believe it.
Here's another one of the great bastards that the great comedy of the Republican debate. And this is Mitt Romney. All right. Now, Mitt Romney says, that
he hasn't said a word since he announced his running, really.
Well,
he's
saying it now. He said two major killers. He says one that corporations are people, and he says Romney cut health care for the poor, not defense spending. All right?
Nice guy.
Yeah. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney on Monday suggested using drastic cuts to health care for the poorest Americans to fund the Department of Defense. Speaking to employees of BAEA system, one of the nation's largest defense companies, candidate said that President Obama and the members of the supercommittee should agree to scale back the Medicaid program in order to prevent $600 billion in cuts to defense spending over 10 years. A doomsday scenario for our military is not the right course, given where the world is headed, Romney remarked. I would call on the president and do call on the president to immediately introduce legislation that says we will not have a $600 billion cut to military. We should not cut any funding from our defense. And I would apply the $600 billion in cuts that were anticipated being imposed upon the military. I would take those and apply them to other parts of the federal budget, he continued. And there are a number of candidates for that. One of them, of course, would be to take something like Medicaid, which is our health care program for the poor, and return the program to the states. And since President Barack Obama took office, the fund's budget has actually grown from $513 billion to $530 billion, according to Associated Press. So, Mitt Romney is a piece of shit.
Yeah, what's he saying there?
Yeah, this is a little piece of it.
Now, Congressman Bass indicated that we received over the weekend some disappointing news, and that's true. The super committee has failed to apparently find a way to bridge a gap and to become fiscally responsible in cutting federal spending. And what's most disappointing about that is that our president has had no involvement with the process. I find it extraordinary that they would have spent every day and many nights working with members of the super committee. This is no time for the United States of America to withdraw its commitment to a powerful and strong military. And a doomsday scenario for our military is not the right course, given where the world is headed. I actually think that there is a battle going on among the various players on the world stage to reshape the planet in their own way, in their own liking. We, of course, want to see the expansion of freedom, free enterprise across the globe. And yet there are other models. There are a number of players who want to see an expansion of totalitarianism and are building a network of totalitarian might. Then there's, of course, a third competitor. And the third competitor is the jihadist competitor. I have a $600 billion cut to America's military. We should not cut any funding from our base Department of Defense budget. That should not occur. And I would apply the $600 billion that we're anticipated being imposed upon the military. I would take those and apply them to other parts of the federal budget. And there are a number of candidates for that. One, of course, would be to take something like Medicaid, which is our health care program for the poor, and return that program to the states, telling the states that their funding will grow at the CPI plus 1%. By doing that, you more than compensate for the $600 billion, which would be restored to the defense budget. Now, by the way, as you know, the defense budget has taken a lot of hits. This is not the first time this administration.
You heard it from there, okay. Now, what he's talking about is taking it away from the federal budget, of course, but applying it to the already crippled state budgets.
Yeah.
Right, which is, this is typical. So, typical Republican, screw the poor, fund these unneeded, ridiculous programs for the military. Another thing, interesting thing I read today is Canada is converting currency from paper to plastic.
Mm.
Does that make sense to you?
I have read something about this before.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And I'll just quickly read this because it's kind of funny. Canada has just started issuing $100 denominational notes on a polypropylene substrata.
Like a credit card?
Plans to make all of its paper currency plastic within the next 2 years. Besides foiling counterfeiters, there are also costs and environmental advantages. The notes are expected to last at least 2.5 times longer, on average, than their paper equivalents, and since fewer replacement notes will be needed over the life of the series, the polymer series would reduce the environmental impact of manufacturing process and of transporting new notes to financial institutions and worn notes back to the bank. The note in the polymer series are the first to have a stripe of holographic foil. The image on the foil, which is placed in a large vertical window, are large, brilliant, and complex, and the details and color can be seen clearly from both sides of the note. A second smaller window contained a frosted area, viewed against a single point of light source, shows a circle of numbers. But the polymer series also retains the features contained in the current Canadian Journey series to help the blind and partially sighted to identify large numeral against the contrasting backgrounds, and so on. So their money is made of polymer. Will be made of polymer. I don't know.
Will it be thin or be like a credit card? Or?
As far as I can tell, it'll be like a dollar, but it'll be made out of
plastic.
Plastic. Yes. Made out of polymers. Here's another one. I have to give credit to Iona Miller. She sent both of these interesting articles to me. But this one here is computerized contact lenses will keep you up to date with news and texts. What do you think of that? I thought that was pretty cool. And let's see. Computerized contact lenses. This is from Mail Online, which is a British newspaper. It says, imagine catching up with your, prototype could create hands-free information, was placed into a rabbit's eye without causing any health problems. Inventor also looking to incorporate sensors to pick up important medical data. And meanwhile, Britons are trying out bionic eye, which could end blindness. And imagine catching up with your text, social networking, and perhaps the news without having to log on to a computer or even catch at a smartphone. Messages and images would simply appear in front of your eyes, generating a computerized contact lens. Of course, you may not always want to be bothered by such messages if you are doing anything so quaint as, for instance, reading a book or going out walking and enjoying the scenery. But until now, the concept of infovision, the ability to stream information across a person's field of vision, that has belonged to the realms of science fiction, featuring a film such as the Terminator series or TV shows such as Torchwood. However, scientists have developed a prototype lens that could one day provide the wearer with all kinds of hands-free information. It could also be used to display directions in TV programs.
Yeah.
And the article goes on quite on and it describes it. But if you want to look at it, you want to check it, go to Mail Online and put in computerized contact lenses. I think you'll be quite surprised. This is. I'll end with this one because I have to call Gail. But I think this is kind of interesting. Fox News viewers know less than people who don't watch any news. The study shows.
So they know less.
They know less than people who don't watch any news at all.
Oh, that's all amazing. Right?
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting. Let's hope I can pull us up
here. Every time we have an article we really love, we try to get it, and it's been taken down.
It's been taken down, yeah. This Huffington Post had it, but I don't know if...
Huh? Looks like that one's gone.
Let's see. Let's try it again. Sometimes it comes up, and sometimes not.
There it is.
Oh, no, they got this damned...
Google.
Stupid AdSense. Here it comes. I don't think it's going to play for us now.
We'll move on to something else.
This was such a good article. Let's see if we can get it.
No, just move on.
It's being blocked. All right. Mm-hmm. It's being censored. Fox
Maybe.
News probably tackled it. Yeah. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else here. Oh, yeah. It's already $9 trillion missing from the Federal Reserve. Federal Inspector General can't explain.
Was that the money that Hillary Clinton took to Europe? Remember?
Hillary Clinton took to Europe?
Yeah, she went to the Federal Reserve. And
oh, that could be. That
uh-huh.
could be.
Remember that? That was about
ago.
3 years ago.
There was all this money was trillions of dollars
mm-hmm.
was missing, and it was delivered. That's correct. And I remember,
do you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
I've forgotten exactly where
but
she
in this
took
case,
it.
Alan Grayson, the representative, asked Federal Reserve Inspector General about the trillions of dollars lent or spent by the Federal Reserve, and
mm-hmm.
there were $9 trillion missing. That's right. That's right. I remember Wayne Mattson, I think,
mm-hmm.
was the one that came up with
mm-hmm.
that. That's correct. There's so many. There's
and then
so
you
much.
Never hear that's kind of dropped out because there's so many other.
That's right. Yeah, it kind of like left the news. Ron Paul's Federal Reserve admits that Ron Paul got the Federal Reserve to admit that it had no gold at all.
Uh-huh.
Has no gold.
Did I have anything?
So where the hell is what's in Fort Knox? There isn't anything there.
It's been taken.
That's right. America's not broke. Oh, Bachman. Michelle Bachman said, it's absurd to waterboard me to prove it's not torture. Republican presidential candidate Michelle Bachman is pretty sure waterboarding isn't torture.
Well, then she should have it.
But she says it would be absurd to find out for herself. Yeah, okay. And I got so many great stuff. And, of course, Newt Gingrich wants to legitimize child labor, okay, again. And
he wants to legitimize child labor?
Yeah, he wants child labor. And Roman Catholic Church pedophile investigator jailed for possessing thousands of child porn images.
Well, as I told Leo, they asked for somebody with experience,
yeah,
and they got it.
Unbelievable.
Of course, they didn't look to see what kind of experience.
We want
to give Gail a call.
I'm going to call her now. And there's one other one I had to bring up. As top Chinese finance professor, every province in China is now Greece. Highly respected Chinese professor says the economy of China is as precarious as Greece and is facing a devastating collapse.
Huh.
Imagine that.
as I told you before.
Unbelievable.
I'm not surprised.
unbelievable.
Well, how else are you going to conquer a country of that size?
Yeah,
you get them to join the Federal Reserve, and then you break them and bankrupt them.
Then you bust them.
That's right.
Just like they did to everybody.
That's exactly right.
All right. So I'm going to call our friend Gail, and she'll answer right away. And we're calling Gail Townsend. She is a pro-Palestinian activist.
Hello.
Hi,
hey, Gail. How are you?
Hi, Lila. Hi, Leo. I'm okay.
How are you? That's good. We're really glad to have you on the show tonight. We haven't talked to you for quite a while, and I kind of had three areas that I'd like you to comment on tonight. The first one is, as Leo and I were talking, that the issues of Palestine have gone right out of the news.
Mainstream, for sure.
Out of the mainstream.
And the Internet is very limited on it.
So we'd like you to comment on that. Second, I'd like you to also comment on, I know you're quite active and you work for an Indian paper, and I'd like you to comment on just generally what's happening with American Indians in this country today. And I did have a third thing, and now it went out of my head, but it'll come up to me.
You sound like Perry.
I sound like Perry. How's that?
Oh, there was three things. I forgot the third.
But that'll come. The first thing I'd like you to talk about, though, is what's happening in Palestine, and so much has gone out of the news. Is there anything that we've missed that might be happening right now that we can bring to our listeners?
Oh, just the daily abuses, the daily brutality, the daily attacks on Gaza. There was a meet, activists are very, very much into civil disobedience and nonviolent protests, and I think it was last week there was an action. Freedom Riders, a whole bunch of people, including our very own Mazen Kumsia, who lived here in Connecticut, boarded a bus in Ramallah, I think, and or actually boarded a settler's bus to go to Jerusalem. And you can find the videos on YouTube. The Israeli soldiers, the Zionist soldiers, came and just totally brutally removed them from the bus. So that was one action that was happening. The protests continue, at various sites in the West Bank. Israel continues to steal Palestinian land, bulldoze, ancient olive trees, brutalize and arrest people, detain people. Mazen was arrested for the umpteenth time a couple of weeks ago at a protest at Walaja near Bethlehem that the Israelis are building a wall around.
What is happening with the since they got recognized?
UNESCO.
The first thing that happened when UNESCO recognized Palestine was that the United States stopped sending the Palestinian Authority, that's the acting president Mahmoud Abbas, the money that sustains his regime. And I say acting president because his term of office ran out, I believe, in January 2009. But he's still miraculously there, as if by magic. So that was to punish UNESCO. They stopped paying the Palestinian salary, money that the Palestinian Authority pays. Israel decided to withhold payments. Israel collects taxes for Palestine and skims money off the top. So they decided to just keep the whole bundle for themselves. And this is like hundreds of millions of dollars each month. So that's what happened with that UNESCO recognition. As far as the recognition in the Security Council, they don't have the votes. They don't have the votes, and they don't have 9 votes, and the Obama administration said they would veto it anyway. So it's kind of an exercise in futility.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there any outcry about the money that's being withheld, the tax money? Is there any remedy for
Where's the national outcry on that? Where are the UN and anybody, you know?
Where's the international, you know, I almost said no when you asked me to come on the show tonight because I was thinking, what do I have to say that I haven't said a million times before? You know, Israel continues its illegal occupation of Palestinian lands. It continues to steal Palestinian lands. It continues to violate international law in terms of human rights, in terms of civil rights, in terms of national rights. It's an apartheid state. It treats its Palestinian citizens within the so-called boundaries of so-called Israel as second-class citizens, as an apartheid state. And the world knows all this. We all know all this. We watch it happening every day, and yet nothing is done. Nothing is done.
In your committee, your MEAC, Middle East Act Committee, what have you proposed there, or what has come out of that now?
Well, MEAC is an activist group, and it's headed by Stanley Hiller, who is the founder, and he founded it way back in the day, 1982, during the Sabra and Shatila massacres in Lebanon. Which Israel supported, and so he produces a weekly television video program that's on about 20 channels from Vermont to New York, and he organizes a lot of actions. They've joined the various Occupy actions, and they set up interviews with Connecticut legislators for a all the good that does, and supports different activities and different actions, and so our next meeting we'll start planning for Israeli Apartheid Week, which happens in the spring.
When you say you'll start planning for that, what exactly do you mean, Gail?
Well, last year two of the members really did most of the work, really did a lot of the work. They did probably almost a dozen activities in a week around Connecticut, including, presentations. Mazen Kumsia was in town then, and he did presentations at various libraries about his new book, Popular Resistance in Palestine. That was really good. There were, theatrical things. There was a panel discussion with me and Kehlani and Stan at in Middletown one day, discussing. I presented the thing that I'm working on that draws parallels between the Christian doctrine of discovery and the ideology of Zionism. So that was kind of my guinea pig presentation. It's still sort of in draft form. And just a bunch of different activities around Israeli Apartheid Week. And it happens all over the world. It's sort of coordinated all over the world. But I have a couple of news articles that you might be interested in. My favorite one came out last week or a couple of days ago, November 19th, and this is about the Israeli government is looking for, you ask why the news isn't focusing on Palestine. Well, Israel is doing its best. It has its, what it calls its Hasbara. You can even go to, it even has a website, Hasbara.com, and that's its propaganda machine. So what it's doing now is Israel's Ministry of Public Diplomacy and Diaspora Affairs has published a call for applications to voluntary positions in Israeli public diplomacy, targeting, in particular, quote, minority members, representatives of the gay community, and people representing the variety of opinions and worldviews in Israeli society. So they're trolling for lesbian, gay, transgender, and bisexual members of those communities to go out and sell Israel as a democracy. How do you like them apples?
Well, you know what happened to me.
You couldn't make up this stuff. You couldn't make it up.
Oh boy.
Well, you know what happened a couple of weeks ago. We were in Torrington, and I was Lila was in TJ Maxx, and in the mall there, and we were, and I was standing outside waiting for her, and a couple of women came walking by, and said, "Here," and they handed me a DVD, and it was called what was it called? 180. All right, and I said, "Here, read this. Here, see, enjoy this." And they just walked by. So I was looking at it, and it was really.
You thought it was a music CD.
It was kind of cryptic, and it didn't really say what was on it. It just said 180. You'll be amazed, whatever. And so I brought it home and I played it. And the minute I played it, it was a total Jewish Israeli Jewish propaganda half hour. Video on the Holocaust and how badly suffered and blah 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 and I couldn't believe it. They just handed this DVD, so they were passing these things out at the malls, and I just said, and it dawned on me, because everything you've seen recently, about Israel, even they've been promoting Israel and the Holocaust and the this and the that and how horrible, how miserable, the Jewish existence has been, on CPTV and on Discovery and everywhere. It's just been flooded ever since the Palestinian thing has come to the UN. They came up
when
with this
one ounce of sympathy for Palestinians.
Yeah,
they try to start one there.
Underbust of propaganda, and to the extent of giving me this. It was a terrible, horrible CD, but just total propaganda. But there it was, But I thought immediately, after I watched it, I said, "Oh my God, they're everywhere." You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's just part of Israel spends millions and millions of dollars and has this comprehensive strategy. The Zionist government to draw the international attention away from its occupation of Palestinian territory and its ongoing dispossession of the Palestinian people and its denial of Palestinians' internationally recognized national and human rights. And this is its policy, and this is what it does.
It's absolutely staggering.
Let me ask you this, Gil. I know in our schools, there is some study done on Israel and the founding of it.
The major Holocaust.
And all of that kind of...
Everybody studies the Holocaust. Yeah.
But there is never any balance brought that no one ever talks about the Palestinian issue. Yeah. Has there ever been... Has your group ever been able to get into high schools or into schools to talk about Palestinian...
Funny you should mention that, because a local resident actually... whose name shall remain unnamed, wrote, Holocaust studies are mandated in the state of Connecticut. So is, I think, the Irish potato famine. And a local resident who shall remain unnamed actually wrote a book on the Holocaust and human rights that was adopted by the State Department of Education. I don't know if it's still in existence. 10 years ago, when I came back from the West Bank in August of 2001, I guess it was, just after the Second Intifada had started, and, people were being killed everywhere, and there were roadblocks and checkpoints and horrible. I was so outraged. I wrote to the State Department of Education and said that they should stop using that book because it was biased. It was like a 100-page book. About 90 pages had dealt with the Holocaust. Then there was a couple of paragraphs or a couple of pages about, Cambodia or whatever. And then there was a paragraph at the end saying that, of course, the Palestinians were responsible for worldwide terrorism. And it was this outrageous thing. I still have copies of it here. I don't know whatever happened to it. I don't know whatever happened. I don't know if it's still in use in the schools, but it's certainly something that should be. It's certainly something that should be pursued.
I think I told you about the activist, the guy here his name will remain nameless on the show, but when he was a peace activist and so on and so forth, and pretty well known in the area, I confronted him on an issue one afternoon at a peace rally, and he said, and it was on the Palestinian issue, and he said that he totally 100% agreed with institutional or government sponsored genocide. All right.
What?
And I said, you have the nerve to stand here in a peace rally, to denounce war and murder and against the Afghanis and the Iraqis and so on, and yet you stand here and can actually, you know, tell me that you support state sponsored genocide? What kind of a hypocritical prick are you? You know, and of course that it infuriated me to the point where we almost got into a fist fight.
So much for peace.
Right? But you know, at a peace movement, because I mean, to me, the guy was a complete and utter hypocrite, and is today. But you know, that's the kind of insanity, all right, that prevails in our society, and for this guy, okay, the guy you're talking about, the guy who wrote this book, all right.
It was a woman,
or whoever, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just the fact that they wrote the book and can get away with that kind of propaganda and that kind of bull is an outright crime. You know, it's a crime against humanity, if you will.
The question that I have, Gail, you wrote a letter to the State Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did you
ever get a response?
I think I did get a response saying that, I think I got a response along the lines that they would review it when the book was out of print or something, and they were going to review it. So I must say I dropped the ball on that, and I should have followed up on that.
But you see, I'm not blaming you at all for that. But what bothers me so much is that I'm guilty of the same thing, and I have a tendency to drop the ball. Things come along, and I get busy, and you get involved with other topics and stuff. But it was just appalling to me to see the propaganda push. Okay, after the Palestinians had that speech in the UN, and
yeah, well, you know, I mean, it was a lovely speech, and Abbas, you know, did himself real well.
Did the best he could, you know.
That speech, but it's a bogus move. It's a bogus move to go to the UN and ask them to recognize Palestine on, you know, basically 7% of 22% of historic Palestine. What, you know, he has no business doing that. He has no authority to do that. He has no mandate from the people to do that. He didn't hold a referendum and ask the people of Palestine, in Palestine and in the diaspora, if they were willing to settle for, you know, 7% of their historic land and just forgive Israel for stealing the rest of it? I mean, what kind of BS is that?
No.
You know, apart from the fact that it's a stupid move, because it gives up, it was undefined. You know, it was totally undefined on the 1967 borders. Why should the Palestinians be expected to give up their righteous struggle for autonomy, for self-determination, and for their country? Why should they be expected to give up their land? Why?
Well, I didn't think that speech was involved that they would give up their land. I think it was
by settling for. He's talking about the 1967 borders, but that's BS, because as everybody knows, the West Bank and Gaza was 22% of historic Palestine. Since 1967, Israel has taken over almost all of the West Bank. There's 7% of the 22% left in these little Bantustan areas that are separated from each other, that are surrounded by illegal Israeli settlements, and armed to the teeth, and that's the state that he wants to create. He wants to accept a state on these little Bantustans and be under Israeli occupation forever. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's time for him to go.
I guess I didn't really understand the speech. From what he was basing it on, it seemed like he had a great deal of support from the Palestinians there, but maybe he had
a great deal of support from his party. He didn't have support from the democratically elected Hamas people. They were
who are totally ignored in this process.
Oh, and speaking of which, you know, behind all of this, I place the blame and responsibility squarely on the shoulders of the American government. Report came out just the other day, the 18th. United States may sanction the Palestinian Authority, that's Abbas, right? If Fatah and Hamas implement a reconciliation deal that they signed in May. In other words, you have this split society, right? And this split government, and they want to get together. They want national unity so that they can move forward on their national agenda. And here's the United States saying, divide and conquer. If you get together, if you solve your problems, Palestinians, we're going to crap all over you more than we already have.
Yeah, it's true. And I, you know...
One wonders how much more that can be done to those poor people.
And what makes you sick is the Republican debates. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but all of these clowns, every one of these clowns is so pro-Israel, anti-Palestinian, that it is just... It makes you sick.
My favorite recent comment was from the bat guano crazy Michelle Bachmann, who said that unemployed Americans don't deserve to eat.
Oh, I know.
But we should never stop providing aid to Israel.
It's true.
But unemployed Americans don't deserve to eat. Because a day without labor is a day without food. But let's never, ever stop giving Israel $3 billion plus a year of my and your tax dollars, hard-earned.
When I saw that, I posted that on Facebook, and I said, you know, you wonder if she must have, you know, she had supposedly 24 foster kids, all right? She must have put them all out in sweatshops. You know that? I mean, this woman is horrible. And then Newt Gingrich today, I posted that on a Facebook. I saw this. I couldn't believe it. He wants to abolish child labor laws.
Yeah, how about that one?
So that kids can be working at 13, 12, 13 years old.
Why so old? Why not eight and nine?
Oh, whatever. He wants to abolish all the labor laws, all right, protecting children.
What is wrong
with these kind of crazy-ass people? I mean, it's just,
It's the dissolution of this empire, you know? I mean, it's just so blatantly clear that things are just, you know, it's the end of this empire and things are just,
it's falling apart.
Another favorite story just recently, yesterday, 2 days ago, you know, the famous Simon Wiesenthal, right?
Yes, of course.
Of course. So he's sponsoring the Museum of Tolerance in Jerusalem. It's being built on the slope of an ancient Muslim cemetery containing thousands of graves, containing the remains of the companions of the prophet and scholars and martyrs. And so now they are planning to exhume 1,000 bodies from this historic Maman Allah cemetery in occupied Jerusalem. And this guy said, this Israeli guy, Dimitri Dalyani, said that digging and excavation works in the cemetery continue unabated with the consent of all Israeli authorities concerned, principally the Antiquities Department and the Jerusalem Municipality.
Unbelievable.
Oh, you know, that's
such.
Can you imagine digging up people's ancestors. It's just absurd. So this is the Museum of Tolerance, and you know.
To turn it around, it's like building a cathedral on top of an Indian cemetery, you know,
right.
In this country. We've devastated and decimated so many indigenous grave sites and sacred grounds. It's
I did want to ask you if you had any update on the Scaticokes with Chief Elke.
Yes, their pavilion longhouse was burned last week.
Oh no!
How did that happen?
Arson. State police deemed it arson. I went up there. I was down there on Friday. In fact, I have to write a story about it. I was there on Friday and. It's pretty pathetic. Somebody just torched it. Somebody.
You think it had to do with any of those crazies that were up there to begin? Yeah, that.
The person that finally got thrown out.
Yeah.
Well,
or Russell.
No, actually, he's still there.
Oh, he's still there.
Because he's appealing the court. He's appealing the
cross
decision. It's in the appellate court in Connecticut right now.
What about their? Are they doing anything about pursuing their identity and their recognition?
Their federal recognition. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Or there's nothing that I can actually talk about right now.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I just wondered if anything had happened there that you could talk about.
Well,
Neil,
I want to thank you for coming. I didn't know that you were going to say no or thinking about it. You know, there are so few programs really around that really are talk about these issues in detail and so few people that are willing to put themselves on the line to talk about it. And we want to thank you so much for doing that. And we respect your work and respect your activism and thank you for being on the show tonight.
And I'm glad you don't remain silent, because that's what they count on.
Yeah.
They count on grinding you down and making you just,
I can't tell you how many times Lila and I have just gone, shrugged our shoulders and said, man, is this going? But when we see 100,000 listeners to this show, and we know that we know people are listening and tuning in, that's encouraging. So.
And it makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
And you do great work, Galen. We appreciate that you keep us up to date on these issues. And thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay. Good night.
Take care.
Good night. That was Gail Corey-Thompson. Talked to us about Palestinian issues and gave us a little bit of an update on what's happening with the Scaticoke recognition.
Yeah.
Federal recognition here in Connecticut. They have a real uphill road.
Yeah, our next guest is, John Brennan joining us. He's on the line, and we're going to go right to Johnny here. And hang on a second.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hey, John, how are you?
John, how are you?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was on air yet.
Yeah, you're on now.
It's nice to be back in your show again.
It's great to have you, John.
Welcome back. We understand you were down in sunny Florida.
In Florida, yeah, avoiding the just after the snowstorm here. I actually got a chance to go down. My sister has a place down there now. She's just moved from Europe to Northport, Florida. So it was a nice little change for me. I hadn't been down in Florida for about 10 years. Anyway, I've got a number of things here tonight I'm just going to talk about. I'm going to skip around a little bit. I usually talk a little bit about the chemtrails and weather modification. I'm going to overlook that tonight. I didn't hear the beginning of your show, so if you have touched on some of these subjects, you can tell me. One of the things that caught my eye in the news was this guy, Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House a number of years ago. you know, these are the kind of people who we've had running the country, basically. And one of the things he came out with, this is just to give you a glimpse into the mindset of what I'm going to call a lunatic. They're perverts are out there, you know, molesting the children, and they're in, you know, universities at the highest levels, like the scum rising to the top. But this guy here comes out and he says basically that we need to basically roll back some of the rules for child labor laws. So in other words...
We did mention it, but you can go ahead.
It just struck me as like, wow, are these guys going to try and bring us back to the like the movie Oliver Twist, you know, when the children are going to be cleaning the chimneys? It took us a century nearly to get ourselves out of that sort of, even it's pre-communism, just absolute tyranny, I mean, beyond belief. But, you know, I'm going to play the clip. Wait till you hear himself here. I mean, there's nothing better than hearing it from the man's mouth.
I know.
Let me just play this clip for you.
Sure. Policies of protecting unionization and bureaucratization against children in the poorest neighborhoods, crippling them by putting them in schools that fail, has done more to create income inequality.
Let's just stop. Crippling them in schools that fail. So why are the schools failing? Now, you know, every single piece of this interview, I could stop it and add something. But
go ahead, John.
You know, he's basically going to try and imply that it would be better for the children to be just not be in school because they're losers and just go out in the workplace to all the millions of jobs that are here, of course. There's how many millions of people, like 26 million unemployed, foreign immigrants still pouring into the country, visas being given to foreigners all over the place. And not only do we have to compete against that, now we have to compete against the handicapped people in the workplace and maybe 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds soon. Isn't this wonderful? Let's play this guy again.
The United States than any other single policy. It is tragic what we do in the poorest neighborhoods in trapping children in, first of all, in child laws, which are truly stupid. Okay, you say to somebody, you shouldn't go to work before you're what, 14, 16 years of age. Fine. You're totally poor. You're in a school that is failing with a teacher that's failing.
And why are you totally poor, Mr. Gingrich? Because your country, your government, has given all the jobs to the overseas Chinese. They've deindustrialized America. But I'll let them go on. Come on, Newt, come back here.
I tried for years to have a very simple model. Most of these schools ought to get rid of the unionized janitors, have one master janitor, and pay local students to take care of the school.
The kids
would actually do work. They would have cash.
So we can have the kids clean the toilets. Isn't this guy amazing? This is what's around your...
Yeah, or fix the furnaces. Or
have them do the electricity as well. This is unbelievable. This is the lunatic people we've had running this country, and we wonder why things are going down.
They have pride in the schools. They begin the process of rising. Get any job that teaches you to show up on Monday. Get any job that teaches you to stay all day, even if you're having a fight with your girlfriend. I mean, the whole process of making work worthwhile is central. We have cut, and this is a huge, you put your finger on it. I take seriously that every American of every ethnic background in every neighborhood has the right to pursue happiness, and that it was endowed by their creator. That means you're going to see from me extraordinarily radical proposals to fundamentally change the culture of poverty in America and to give people a chance to rise very rapidly.
Wow. I mean...
Only 5 cents an hour, probably.
Well, he's going back to the days of the Industrial Revolution. The problems they had in Britain, or here in the United States, back in the 1800s, when kids, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids were running treadmills, you know what I mean? And
right.
You know, things like that. I mean, this guy is sick shit.
What you also have to understand is, and I've said on your radio show before, I think I remember talking to Lila one night saying this, that the plan is to bring us to the way China used to be, the old China. They're bringing us back down to that sort of a stage. I mean, we may not be going immediately back to the 18th century, but we're going back to 1950s China.
Yeah, but Johnny, it's the same. They're doing it now in China. I mean, you know, they may have they've got 1.3 billion people in China. Okay, they've got about 400 million okay, supposedly people that have reached the middle class kind of status, okay, but that still leaves about a billion people that are earning a dollar a day.
Right.
Right? And children, and they do not have child labor laws, and kids are working in factories still.
And that's the way people who are running this country want it to be. The corporations are the country. That's the way they like it. Their job is to bring us back down, to absolutely gut the environmental laws, to gut the labor laws, the union laws, eradicate the unions.
That's what Republicans want. That's what they run on every year.
Well, if you listen to all of those candidates, you hear different things like that from all of them.
I mean, look at Michelle Bachmann, who said that if you don't work, you should starve.
Right, I remember seeing that, the video as well. There's an audio track of that. Or even another thing they mentioned here about Newt Gingrich. This guy really maddened me. I'm sorry to harp on about this one subject. I'll be over it in a minute. But he said that the people who were at the Wall Street protest should get a job and go wash themselves. Well, now, hold on.
Oh, yeah.
There was a very good sign down there that some lady held up at the Occupy Wall Street. And I'm not really a favor or a supporter. If I was, I'd be down there right now because I believe it's a little bit, tainted, let's just say. But the sign that a lady had at the Occupy Wall Street, if they enforced bank regulations like they enforce park rules, we wouldn't be in this mess in the first place.
That's right. That's
now,
right.
We could bring that a little further and say, if the government had done its homework and done its job and making sure that our industrial base would not be lost as a worldwide power, and instead of using it as a military sort of agent to go around conquering other nations for the might of the corporations, or for the good of the corporations, I should say. That's
outsourcing our military to military contractors and outsourcing our industrial base to foreign countries to build our ammunition and our tanks and everything else.
And then they have the gall to say to the people who were down on Wall Street that they get a job. Well, believe it or not, I'd say half of the people down there are employed, and their civil duty is still to stand up to a corrupt and crazy banking system that has just let them down. And they're some of them, I'm sure, have sons and daughters, and it's in their sons and daughters' name that they're down there.
Right. It was actually a poll, John, that was done. They took a poll of the people that had in around the country that were involved in the protest, and 85% of those people had full-time jobs.
Well, I would suggest that that's probably true. Well, now, another thing I just noticed on the news net, that what's happening in Egypt, that thing is re-erupting in a very, very big way. And this is very interesting, what's going on over there. The revolution that started, the Arab Spring, was in Egypt. Now the people are beginning to realize they were had. This second revolution is not going to end the way the first one did. There's literally millions of people coming into the streets over there. And it's going to be a pitched battle with the government forces.
It already is. In fact, I heard tonight that they were that they already planned to they want these guys out by this next month. Okay, they're giving the military till next month, and the military originally had said they would be out by January, and then they've tried to push off the elections till to June.
Well, don't be surprised if you see American forces coming in there to keep law and order.
Be interesting to see that. Yeah, it would be very interesting to see what happens.
Because that was what the plan was, to have a puppet government of the United States running it, and they're not going to give in at this stage to the people.
No, they're not.
The game is up. People know what's going on.
But at the same time, these Egyptians are madder than hell.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. I don't think they know they've been duped by the U.S. And I honestly don't think that they're going to let this go.
This will be the most interesting story.
This will be like Afghanistan. This will be like they'll be like the Taliban over there. You know, they're not going to let this go. You know?
No, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch this play out over the next. It'll be in the next 6 months. It's going to be the big story.
Oh yeah, and look what happened in Syria. All of a sudden, now you got the Syrian rebels that have pretty much taken over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. since Hillary Clinton has been siding with the and saying that the Assad should step down, the Syrian government. So it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens there. But I think Egypt is going to show its real stuff, and you're going to have a hell of a revolution there. I don't think that's over yet.
I have another story here. I'm going to have to change gear a little bit because in the interest of time, I only got the half hour. So I have another story here, and I don't know if we talked about this before, but I've often mentioned during our radio broadcasts when you're on the FM station in Lakeville there about the coming microchip society
that
I've talked about, and also the beginning of a cashless society. And, you know, you get these people who say, oh, you know, we already don't use cash anyway, a lot of us, but at least you'll always have a choice, we would hope. Now,
right. This
summer, the legislature and the governor of Louisiana passed a law that bans individuals and businesses from transacting in cash if they're considered a secondhand dealer. This was a House Bill 195 of the 2011 regular session, and it broadly defines a secondhand dealer to include anyone other than a nonprofit entity who buys, sells, trades in, or otherwise acquires or disposes of junk, used, or secondhand property more frequently than once per month for any other person other than a nonprofit entity. Now, it says that basically people who have pawn shops, if you're having a garage sale on more, you know, a lot of people have those kind of regular. You see them around here even. Every Saturday somebody will have a little sale outside their house, garage sale or whatever. But it basically is making those people have to do all the transactions by credit card or debit card so as it can be watched by the government. I'll play you the clip from the local TV station.
Are they taxing it? Is that it?
Sorry?
Are they taxing that?
Taxing. And of course, the guise of why they have to do this, it's because the bad guys are stealing some stuff, and we just want to keep an eye on them. It's for your safety, of course. No, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
It's always for your safety. We love you so much.
Involved.
I mean, you know, these are the same people who would tell you, you know, they want to keep your children safe, but then they give you vaccines that give them cancer, and then the same people are probably, all in support of the war to make bombs and landmines that kill children and you know, innocent civilians all over the world. So you can't have it both ways. Let me play this clip and you'll...
Cold, hard cash. It's good everywhere you go, right? You can use it for anything, to pay for anything. But that's not the case here in Louisiana now. It's a law that was passed during this year's busy legislative session. KLFY TV 10 Eyewitness News reporter Doug McDermott joins us live in the newsroom with how a bill like this could have flown so far under the radar. Doug.
Well, Darla, basically House Bill 195 says those who buy and sell secondhand goods cannot use cash in those transactions. And it flew so far under the radar that most businesses don't even know about it.
We're going to lose a lot of business. We don't want this cash transaction to be taken away from us. I mean, it's an everyday transaction.
Danny Guidry owns the Pioneer Trading Post in Lafayette. He deals in buying and selling unique secondhand items.
I think everyone in this business, once they find out about it, they're going to definitely be, there's going to be a lot of uproar.
The law states those who buy or sell secondhand goods are prohibited from using cash. State Representative Ricky Hardy co-authored the bill.
They give a check or a cashier's money order or a electronic. One of those three mechanisms is used.
Hardy says the bill is targeted at criminals who steal anything from copper to televisions and sell them for a quick buck. Having a paper trail will make it easier for law enforcement.
It's a mechanism to be used so the police department could be able to have something to go on and have a lead.
Guidry feels his store should not have to change its ways of doing business because he may possibly buy or sell stolen goods, something he says has happened only once in his 8 years.
We are being targeted for something that we shouldn't be.
Besides nonprofit resellers like Goodwill, along with garage sales, the language of the bill encompasses stores like the Pioneer Trading Post and flea markets. Lawyer Thad Ackle Jr. feels the passage of this bill begins a slippery slope for economic freedom in the state.
The government is placing a significant restriction on individuals' transacting in their own private property.
Pawn shops have been forced to keep records of their clients for years, but in this new law, they're still able to deal in cash. Live in the newsroom for KLFY TV Tonight Witness News, I'm Doug McDermott.
Thanks, Doug. Well, it was another warm day as we head.
Well, there you have it from the local affiliate down there in Louisiana. I still will meet people who say, no, there's no such law. There is. It's on the books. It's one more brick in the wall, the mark of the beast. You shall not buy or sell, but you bear the mark called Visa,
yeah.
I suppose, you know. It's pretty sad the way these things just steal in, isn't it?
They
kind of creep into the legislature. You don't even get passed. You don't even know that's happening.
Yep.
That's right. Now, I'm just watching my time here again. I've got one or two other little items I'd like to play. Something that came to my attention was a very interesting video, which will be an audio for you guys in radio land here. Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam speaker, you've often heard him. And I know, again, he wouldn't be one of my favorite people in the world. And I did go through many years of not understanding what he was about or who he really was. And he's always demonized on the mainstream media. And after you hear what he has to say, and it's such truth he speaks that you'll understand why he's demonized.
I've always appreciated Louis Farrakhan for
he speaks out.
For what he says.
Right. I mean, I've also been a little bit skeptical of David Duke. And then when you get to listen to some of the stuff a little further, he has his good points. There's no doubt about it. Not everything. But here, Louis Farrakhan is basically going to be talking about how Muammar Gaddafi was taken out and why he was taken out.
Dead men don't talk.
Right. So here's...
why you were angry with him. Because he never agreed with your policies when it came to sucking the resources of third world peoples and putting in place dictators that would be amenable to America's policies. And whenever a government arose, a leader arose that wanted to use the resources of that nation for that nation's people, America, through the CIA, would plan insurrection, coups, terrorist activity, and even assassination of goodly to put in their place America's dictators. Truth is the only weapon that the wicked fear. They don't fear guns because they have bigger guns. They fear truth. But most people who know the truth are afraid to print it, to tell it, to spread it, because they fear consequences. Anybody here that's not going to die? I didn't think so. So what the hell are you afraid of? Stand up like a man and save your country. Some of them are sure not Al-Qaeda. Gaddafi was not lying, Brother Baghdadi. We researched it. Al-Qaeda is there. There are drugs. They're true. The drugs among young people. All you young brothers. See, the enemy, if he cannot control you with religion and with this nasty porridge called education, if they cannot control you, they will drug you and then put you at war with one another so that they remain in power. You've got an arrogant nerve while you have lost your democracy to special interest groups, to corporate people that buy laws. All of you know what I'm talking about. Zionist control of the government of the United States of America
Republicans can't get together with Democrats only when something is affecting Israel, then both sides come together. Something is wrong with that picture, America. Think you got the power to take the resources of the people of the world. Here's a man that talked about China like China was a damn puppy dog. You can't handle China. And soon, you will say, you're not the big bad boy on the block. No more! It's over, baby! It's over! The masquerade is over.
The masquerade is over. Louis Farrakhan. I think he's speaking the truth there. I'm sorry to have to say that, but...
I do too, Johnny.
You know,
you were going to play that other one by Galloway, which I thought was fantastic. I hope you get a chance to play that tonight.
Yeah, I can cue it up right now. It's basically a small section of... It was a video... on YouTube called the Zion Mainframe. And I'm touching onto it here at about 14 and a half minutes into it. I'll play it right now until the end of your show, whatever we get. Basically,
That's the Galway speech. That was only about 4 or 5 minutes.
Well, there's a number of little clips have to come in to make it work for the listeners, just to make it all come together. You'll have a clip here from Fox News.
He's
talking about the coming. All the war drums are beating for the attack on Iran, and hopefully the listeners out there are aware of that. That Iran is not going to be like Iraq. They will fight back. And George Galloway here pretty much explains it all. So I'll hit it right away here.
All right, John.
So there's a mushroom cloud over Jerusalem. Nearly half of the U.S. believes we will eventually have to take military action.
This is the propaganda on TV.
According to our new Fox poll.
I'd love to think there's something to negotiate with Iran about, but you have a president there who his sworn aim is to wipe Israel off the face of the map.
This is the propaganda they're telling the public.
The regime in Iran is very aggressive indeed and have made, they may not mean it, and we don't know, but you've got to take them at their word. If they say, if the leader of Iran says he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the earth.
He didn't say that, and you know very well he didn't say that. He said he wanted Zionism to be wiped off the page of history.
Well,
just like he said, Nazism and communism. When you wanted to wipe out communism, you didn't want to wipe out Russia. You didn't want to wipe out the Russian people. This was a political statement.
But George,
it's all right in the news
record,
of the world, but this is the Oxford Union plan.
George,
have a bit of intellectual rigor.
George, your record of...
If you're suggesting that there's going to be a full military invasion of Iran...
No, I'm not suggesting that. James, I'm not suggesting that. But what I'm telling you, and I promise you on this, and I hope you never have to phone me up and say that I was right. I'm promising you this. Do not imagine that Iran will treat a strategic strike any differently from a full-scale invasion. Trust me on this, James. I know what I'm talking about. If we bomb Iran, Iran will bomb us back. And amongst the places it will bomb us is here in the center of London. Innocent people will die. Don't imagine for one second that the deaths will be restricted to Iranians in the north of Iran or anywhere else. Any attack on Iran will be met by a full-scale response by Iran everywhere and anywhere. Trust me on that, James.
Which is why we must disable it from having nuclear weapons.
Well, you say that, but I wonder, living in Suffolk, if you're just maybe imagining you'll be safe from being disabled yourself. But let me tell you, as someone who lives in London, who represents 100,000 souls in London, who lost constituents the last time an underground train blew up, let me tell you, there'll be a lot of disabled people in London in return for your disablement of Iran's nuclear power plants, which are absolutely legal, which they have as much right to develop as we do, and any attempt to bomb Iran, which you're attempting to sanitize with all your military talk, any attempt to bomb Iran will not be one strategic strike on one place in the north of Iran. It will have to be hundreds of strategic strikes on more than 80 places, even if it's only restricted to the nuclear plants. And there's every reason to believe, in the wake of the American statement, criminalizing, making terrorists of the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, which is 150,000 people, which is an indispensable part of Iran's military forces, as terrorists. There's no reason to believe that they're not going to be attacked as well. And I'm telling you, James, and you seem strangely unmoved by it, Iran is not a broken-backed country. Don't imagine this is some cheap, broken-down, darkest African, impotent, defenseless country that you are so somnolently seeking to talk us into bombing. Iran will respond ferociously everywhere if we attack Iran. Self-defense, James.
The real nightmare scenario is the prospect of mullahs in Iran having weapons.
Well, tell me, James, why is that more of a nightmare scenario than Ariel Sharon having hundreds of nuclear weapons, or George Bush having thousands of nuclear weapons, or General Musharraf, who's one bullet away from Islamic Revolution in Pakistan, having nuclear weapons, or the government of India, which refuses to live up to its promises under the Non-Proliferation Treaty? Why are some people, James, allowed to have nuclear weapons, but others are not?
The threat that we face from Iran is far, far greater than the threat we face from the United States.
Why do we face a threat from Iran? What has Iran ever done to us? Iran hasn't invaded another country in more than 300 years. And 300 Spartans saw them off. What's the threat from Iran to us? What have they ever done to us, James?
Well, Iran, if you recall, fought a very brutal war against Iraq.
I can't believe you just said that.
You in the archives on the show.
The war against Iraq. Iraq invaded Iran. Our weapons and with the support of our government. What do you mean they fought a brutal war against
Iraq?
They were invaded, for God's sake.
Are we out of time?
Yeah, that's okay. You can continue playing that, John.
Okay.
The show has stopped streaming, yeah.
Okay.
We'll go into the archives.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll keep going.
But they fought a very brutal campaign.
What does that have to do with them being a threat to us, for God's sake? We encouraged Iraq to invade them. And now you're using the fact that they fought hard to defend their country when it was invaded as a reason for us invading them. You're going to give me a heart attack, James. I better go on.
Because of the propaganda, we equate Zionism with Jewish people. It's not how it is. It's to a very, very large extent. How many people know this? How many Jewish people around the world are protesting, have organizations created to protest against Zionism?
Well, we're off track there with David Icke at the end of that audio. But it was an interesting George Galloway piece there.
I thought it was great. No, I really did. I thought it was a great piece, and I totally agree with him. In fact, you know, what's bothered me so much over the years, ever since Ahmadinejad said that that he would wipe Israel off the map, he never said that.
No,
but
he never, and that
was mistranslated purposely. And then used by every damn propaganda machine in the world.
What?
Right? And what he said is that he would wipe it out of history,
right?
Not wipe it off the face of the earth.
Of course, the American mainstream media, which, you know, basically takes its orders from the Pentagon and from the White House, it's basically
from Israel, for crying out loud.
What has happened is
orders from Israel. Yeah.
Well, the caller that was calling in to George Galloway is obviously one of those brain-dead persons who just gets his sound bites off the BBC or the ITN, which are no different than...
I thought you was, I thought Galloway was a guest, and this guy was a radio show host.
No, he just called. He was a caller, I think, and perhaps it sounded to me like.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Anyway,
Galloway was absolutely right on.
Yeah, there's a number of things I hadn't even been aware. I knew Iran had not attacked any country in 100 years. I didn't realize it was 300 years. And George Galloway's facts are usually pretty on the money because I have checked them before. And then the guy who was calling in, or the other person he was talking to, said
right.
They fought a ferocious war with Iraq. The Iranians did. He forgot to kind of mention it was in self-defense that they were invaded. That is the equivalent of the United States being attacked, and we all just sit there and do nothing. I mean, I don't understand the logic of some of these uneducated callers that call into these shows, but it was interesting for any of the listeners out here who might not be aware of what is going on right now. The preparations are being made for the United States to attack Iran, and if you've got friends in the military, they will be probably called up. And you know, for what reason? Now you know the reasons. But one of the main reasons, and George didn't say there, is that the Iranians want to break away from the United States dollar as the global sort of petrodollar currency.
Right.
It's basically worthless fiat money. The Federal Reserve is basically, we're playing with monopoly money. And
I read something the other day, and I posted this as well, but it was there. You know, I think it was on. I'm not sure where I read this, but it was fascinating that the only three countries remaining that are not Rothschild bankers, that are not Rothschild bank owned, are Iran, North Korea, and Libya was the other one. Now Libya is owned, but Libya was
right.
The other.
That was the reason they took out Gaddafi. He was planning to institute a North African currency
to compete with
the United States dollar, and they could not have that. So they came up with this absolute nonsensical stories about him being a dictator, and they did the rent-a-crowd, brought in their thousand people brought in for
all of a sudden, you know, and big friends with everybody, and McCain a year ago and Blair and everybody else was shaking his hand and stuff a year ago.
They were trying
and
to...
all of a sudden, you know, bam. You know what fascinated me? Gaddafi was, his mother was Jewish. Did
right.
You know that?
Yeah, I had heard that.
And he tried to buy himself Libya a seat in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Yeah, he was close friends. Now, this is something else that's kind of interesting. Where, you know, NATO was going in and trying to attacking Libya and supporting, you know, the rebels. Well, at the same time, Israel was hiring mercenaries to fight against NATO. Does that make sense to you?
Can't figure that one out.
Yeah, they did not want Gaddafi to go down, because Gaddafi was friends with Israel. All right, because of that, and they were actually hiring. They hired upwards of 50,000 mercenaries, okay, to fight in Libya for Gaddafi. Now, that's bizarre.
Well,
that's true.
There's another that is a strange twist in the story, but I think ultimately the demise of Muammar Gaddafi was basically to ensure that this North African currency would never get off its get on its feet, and
that was really part of it. That was supposedly the thing too, but
other nations in Africa too.
Had a very strange incestuous relationship with Israel, kind of very strange how it all worked out. But Gaddafi. But whether Libya was even, there were so many reports that the press was falsely reporting Libya, and that on Libya, and that, you know, people were loyalists to Gaddafi and his family rather than to the NATO rebels, you know?
Mm.
I don't know. We'll never know that story. It'll come out in another 100 years, maybe.
But other countries on the list, one that is, I think you did not mention, that's not under Rothschild control, Ecuador. It's a country we don't really hear much about.
Okay. Ecuador.
Venezuela, I'm not sure. Syria.
Well, Venezuela is now. They weren't one of those.
Ecuador is on the list of...
It was Cuba.
Later. You know.
Cuba. That's right. It was Cuba. It was Iran, North Korea, and Cuba are the only three that are left that are not under Rothschild banking control.
And one of the reasons they don't bother with Cuba is there's not much oil there. And they allow us to have our torture chamber there called Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah,
Bay. Convenient. They're our mortal enemies, and we have
Iran has been, you know... They were under our control in the 50s, and then when they broke away in the 70s, during their revolution, and they haven't been able to get them back since. And they've been trying like hell to infiltrate Iran. Remember those clowns that Iran... Oh, what did you think of this one? About the Israeli... Did you read about the CIA spies that were caught in Lebanon?
In Lebanon, no. Yes, I know the hikers that were in Iran turned out to be Jewish Israeli spies.
Those three guys, right? The two guys and the girl?
They were hiking.
Yeah. We knew those guys were. We knew they were spies.
The media said, "Oh, they were just hikers."
That was such a bullshit. That is unbelievable.
The Iranian government has its equivalent of, you know, the MI5 or CIA, and they have to work a lot harder because they're surrounded by the whole world trying to target them. People coming.
Not only that, when the United States states publicly, nationally, internationally, that they are using covert operations against Iran.
Well, not only Iran, but it's one of hundreds of countries they do, yeah.
Oh, no, but they stated Iran specifically when Bush and even Obama now stated that they are using covert operations to against Iran.
Right.
If I was Iran, you know, I would not want to do anything. I wouldn't trust any American in that country.
Exactly.
None.
Exactly. And you know, to give them credit, they could have banned all Americans. And what I've heard from people who visited there, Americans, have visited Iran, and Irish people and British people, they were treated with the best hospitality that they've ever met in any country they ever went to.
You're not kidding. Wow.
And yes, there'll be groups among us who've never been there and think that they're all a bunch of goat herders, even though the business people dressed in shirts and ties like downtown Boston or New York or Philadelphia.
Right. Very
show you that
on
TV. They all they want to show you is a bunch of people that look like the Taliban up in the mountains of Tora Bora. They don't show you pictures of downtown Tehran and the financial district with the modern cars and just like Russia. We were completely blacked out in our news.
Exactly, but that's exactly why what Galloway said. He says you don't know what you're talking about here.
Right.
You don't. As what you're up against here.
Right.
You're up against a nation of 100 million people or so that are not going to sit back and take this shit.
Right. Iran, if you were to see a true picture of Iran, I don't know if people listening to this show are aware of this or not, but if you were to go downtown Boston tomorrow or go downtown Tehran, there wouldn't be that much difference in the look of things.
Right.
So, you know, the people are cultured, they have their cafes, they drive their cars, they have a bus service, they have trams, they have everything that you see in a normal, very, affluent city. And yet that's never shown to us on the TV. Oh, everybody, I mean, I work with guys, and they say, oh, it's a bunch of, what's it like in Iran? Oh, it's all dirt roads and sheep everywhere. And so I'm like, my God, you people are just clueless, like.
Yeah, They are. There we are.
Just completely, that's like saying, you know, I asked another guy I was in an apartment with there a while back about, you know, what's China like? This guy seemed like a very educated guy. He read a lot of books every night. He seemed to think that China today was like it was back in the 1930s. I was like, so you think Chinese people don't buy cars? He says, of course not. They have no roads. I'm like,
oh my God, they got
stupid. Are you really that stupid? Like,
super,
it's just
train, for crying out loud, and train tracks. They've got super. They're more highly technological than we are now.
Yes, exactly.
Their infrastructure and everything else. These guys are super.
They don't have yuppies. They have what we call chuppies. They're the Chinese yuppies.
Chinese yuppies.
That's a term. They're going around with, there's more mobile phones per square mile over there than there are here. And yet, parts of the country desolate, but I'm afraid to say we have some pretty bad parts too around here. So, you know.
I think what kills me, what really opened my eyes, okay, was a few years back when I read that the Chinese had 400 million middle class.
Right. There are people who can't fathom that in their minds at all. That they think it's just all goat herders or sheep herders. It's like saying in Ireland, everybody's still riding horses.
In the United States, there's only 300 million people.
Right.
And the 300 million people, all right, maybe 50%. Or 50% of that 300 million are actually middle class, all right? Whereas the rest are, you know, working are lower working class. You know what I mean? Are below middle class incomes. And it's like, but I mean, you're dealing with, and we are giving all of our jobs over to this country, all of our energy, and we're buying. You know, I mean, this is bizarre. I mean, it's totally bizarre that we should think, you know, that we could sit here thinking that we are going to grow. I mean, we're going to give our resources to poor China. China has 400 million freaking middle-class people that are living as well, if not better, than our middle class, okay, in this country. Or in Germany, or in Ireland, or in Europe, any part of Europe, all right? And yet, we're outsourcing our jobs to them. You know what I mean? We're buying their goods. We're destroying our own industry and our own trade, okay, because of it. And it's just like, it totally boggles my mind that an American can think that we, I mean, our 150 million middle-class Americans, all right, should give up our positions so that 400 middle-class middle-class Chinese can live better than we do?
Well, they have no choice in the matter, actually, Leo. It's whether they like it or not. While they're dumbed down by the media.
They do have a choice, John, but they're not being told.
But this is what my point is. They've been dumbed down by the media, so they're unaware that the termites, the American people are like a group of people sitting on a nice deck on a sunny day, a nice wooden deck on a sunny day, and the termites are eating the foundation, and we're already down to matchsticks.
We're just holding on. And the minute we walk out the door next day, the deck will crumble.
Right.
And
a lot of people are preparing for this collapse. A lot of people are, you know, they have the survivalists, and they get laughed at. They really do get laughed at. Fanny, I just read a story a while ago about this. You know, what kind of neighbors would you want in the event that this collapse suddenly happened? If they just said tomorrow the banks, that's it. You know, there are different types of people that are around us. You know, we have, and I term them with different names, the lemmings. You know, they that's the type of person. They live life to the fullest, which by their definition essentially means working 9 to 5 in the job they hate, with the co-employees they hate, and going home to watch returns or reruns on the TV of The Apprentice or something, you know.
Something that's terrible. So
drinking away to get rid of the pain of their inadequacy. and you know, and they're bathing in the warm, oily coconut butter glow of mainstream news before sinking into their soft feather bed of political ineptitude and dreaming sensible dreams of kind of a cult-like consumerist mayhem. You know, this is their. They're in a world of. They have no clue what's going on. You know, I don't know. We, you know, even there's only one or two people in politics that are, to me, make any sense. And I know they're probably sort of there just to throw a monkey wrench in eventually. That's Ron Paul. Now, I've got neighbors around here. And, you know, I occasionally over the fence, I think, get talking a little bit about politics. And if they would freak out if you mentioned of voting for a third party candidate like Ron Paul. You know, you could see them. They'd go googly-eyed expressions of disbelief, you know.
But like, if Ron Paul is staying, he's a Republican, you know what I mean? He's staying as a Republican, and he hasn't switched parties. So it's like, you know, he's one of them.
He is one of them, and I've been talking with Andy Sewell about this. He is connected. I forget how I found this out. He's connected.
He's a 33rd degree Mason.
And he's also went to Georgetown University to be trained by the Jesuits, the same people.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, this guy's right up to the eyeballs, man.
Yeah.
He's one of them.
But a lot of people are falling for him, you know. In fact, the one I trust more than him would be Dennis Kucinich.
I don't trust him either.
I met him, and I didn't, you know, when you're up close and personal with the guy, when I looked into his eyes, very cold-looking person.
He's another one. I mean, he keeps the far left into the Democratic Party, and what's his face keeps the far right into the Democratic Party. You know,
I often refer to these people like Ron Paul and Kucinich in a way as the steam valve. It's sort of like guys like Keith Olbermann. You'd come on MSNBC, and you know, during the early years when we found out all about the Patriot Act and the wiretapping, he'd have this big Mr. Bush this and Mr. Bush that, you need to resign. Nothing ever happens. It's a steam valve.
Because,
and then when Obama got
in
things.
And Paul both stuff, and let's impeach George Bush, you know what I mean?
Right.
And what the hell happened? Nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, impeach Cheney. We can't impeach Bush. Let's impeach Cheney. What happened? Nothing. Okay. So, you know, they read 39 articles of impeachment on the floor of Congress, and that was it. You know, I didn't even get a vote.
Right. It's all forgotten about. It's sort of like what happened in Japan. Which person has forgotten there was a nuclear reactor, the biggest in our lifetimes, went belly up?
Demonstration. I mean, there's demonstrations all over the world. There was a huge demonstration, I think it was Sunday, in Tokyo. All right, 60,000-70,000 people down there wanting to end nuclear power in Japan.
You won't hear anything about that on NPR because NPR is heavily funded by the nuclear industry, so they've always got to keep that story.
No, they're Jewish funded, and they're nuclear industry funded, and they're petroleum industry funded. So
not
only
Jewish funded, every single person on their payroll who's on the radio station that you talk is actually, I won't say every single, but 90% of the people that you hear in NPR are Jewish, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just
true. That's absolutely true. So I mean, what kind of fair reporting is that?
Right.
Nothing.
So they're very biased against the Palestinians. And that's my main grief. When it comes to an Israeli-Palestinian story, it was very wrong there. So if you can be biased in one story, you can be biased in any other story.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I know, it's just a joke. I mean, NPR, there's Greg Palast once said it was National Petroleum Radio. You know, really what it is.
One of the saddest things about NPR is that, you know, it's funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, the Catherine C. and G. MacArthur, and you hear all these foundations.
Yeah, right, the foundations, all that crap, yeah.
Yeah, these are mega wealthy foundations, the Ford Foundation. They have an agenda. These people, one of the foundations could probably fund that radio station to run for the next 40 years with a little piece of their money. But they have the gall to tell you every so often we have to have a fundraiser. So you're fundraising for your own self to be told lies. My
yeah.
God.
Exactly.
Really?
It's no different than CPTV, a National Public Television.
Well, at least you might see, Styx or somebody will come on to you, some good bands once in a while, some good rock and roll artists. But, ultimately it is a propaganda thing. So they lure you in with the few nice, music things, and then they got all this other stuff on that'll lead you right up.
Yeah, exactly. The golden oldies or whatever the hell they bring on. It's just a joke. It's just a big joke. We don't support the station, nor do we support NPR. It's just I never give them any money. So it's like, hey, what can I tell you?
Anything that the foundations are into is political in nature, and it's usually New World Order political.
We'll waste our money on that. But anyway, Johnny, we're pretty much out of time. We have been for a while, but I want to thank you for being on tonight. It's great having you back.
I enjoyed being on with you guys again. So I hope we got some educational material to the ears of our listeners. Maybe somebody out there liked something we said, or we'd like you to check it out, actually. We don't want you just to listen to us here. If there's something either you said or I said or Lila said or George Galloway or Louis Farrakhan said that you didn't agree with, go check it out. See if it's true, because...
That's right. You can check all those out on YouTube.
Yeah.
They're all up there. Check out George Galloway or Louis Farrakhan. Speech. They're all there.
And find out about the North American Union in the United States, and find out about the North African currency versus the U.S. dollar, or the fact that Iran is basically trying to break away from the authority of the banking system around the world and just do its own thing and leave everybody alone, and that's why we're going to bomb them. It isn't about the nuclear...
Have their own central bank.
Just an excuse.
Yeah. So, anyway. Johnny, I'm going to have to say goodnight, but I want to thank you again.
I will talk to you guys again next week.
I hope to have you on next week. Hope to hear from you. So, have a good night, John.
Okay, and a good Thanksgiving to everybody.
Hey, you too, Johnny. Take care.
Good night, now.
And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and I hope you enjoyed that. We had a great show with John, and great show with Gail Townsend, and of course Lila. And join us tomorrow right here when we cover some more great news and views.